Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Wednesday, December the 21st, and welcome to our commentary. We're going to get into a few issues today, but I got to begin with this story that just broke here in the last few hours, and that is the death of Franco Harris. For those of you who are NFL fans, particularly Pittsburgh Steelers fans, or more specifically, I should say, the NFL in the 1970s, Franco Harris was the running back for the Pittsburgh Steelers, the team that won four Super Bowls in the 1970s, considered to be one of the greatest teams ever. And he was the running back, and he was a great player, a great player. And, of course, he was involved in perhaps one of the craziest plays in the history of the NFL, and that's what is known popularly as the Immaculate Reception. Because you got to watch the video. I mean, there's impossible to explain it, but you got to watch the video. Terry Bradshaw, the quarterback, throws a pass. The pass actually hits one of the Raiders, okay? So it would have been an incomplete pass. It hits one of the Raiders. It comes back to the hands of Franco Harris, who runs it in for a touchdown. I mean, it's an unbelievable play. Some people say it was an illegal play. I don't know that much about that. But it was nevertheless one of the most incredible plays in NFL history, particularly on television, because this would have been a very different play had it been on the radio. It would have been very difficult to describe on the radio, and much of the country would not understand the play. But you got to watch the video to really see how incredible this play was. So Franco Harris, who went to Penn State University and who was the running back, the prominent running back of the Steelers in the 1970s when they won four Super Bowls. They defeated Dallas twice. I remember that. Anyway, he passed away at age 72. It's quite a shock. I had no idea that he was ill. I had no idea that he was sick. It just came out of nowhere. So rest in peace, Franco Harris. And I think you're going to be probably watching a few videos of that incredible play from the 1972 season. Franco Harris passed away 1950. 2022, 72 years. Amazing. Amazing life. Amazing player. Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the issues. I want to talk about what's happening on the border. There are a couple of theories, if you will, about what's happening on the border, a couple of ideas blowing in the wind, as Bob Dylan would say. And I want to talk about a couple of them. The first one is that this is a calculated move or calculated decision by the Democrats to basically bring all these people into the country, and years later you register them as Democrats. That's the, you know, the calculation that many people say the Democrats are making. The other theory is that they've lost control of the situation, that all of this talk about sanctuary cities and immigration and open borders, all of that sounded real good in the campaign or in theory, but when you actually implement it, you know, it's like the story of the kid who opened the door to the stable and all the horses ran out, and now he doesn't have a clue of how to bring the horses back in. So those are the two theories, that this is a calculated plan and that they simply lost control of the situation. I think they lost control of the situation. That's what I think is happening. I just don't think they understood how complicated this topic was And I don't think they thought through all of the unintended consequences of opening the border. You know, when President Biden came in, he inherited a situation on the border that was basically based on two things. Title 42, which was a policy that President Trump implemented. It is something that we've used in the past, but President Trump brought it back into the mix by simply saying Title 42 will close the border to people coming in the middle of a pandemic. Made a lot of sense because you were able to keep people away on the basis of, hey, we got a pandemic. You know, we cannot take people that we don't know. Title 42, that's one. The other part of the Trump policy was remain in Mexico. Remain in Mexico means that if you're on the border and you want asylum in the United States, you have to remain in Mexico until the judge takes a look at your case and says, okay, you qualify or you don't qualify. What both of those two Trump policies did was that it stabilized the border. It didn't end illegal immigration. It didn't end illegal crossings. That's always going to happen when you have a huge border. But what Trump did was basically he brought it under some kind of control. So, you know, you would at least be able to manage the situation. When President Biden came in, he took away Remain in Mexico, and they're now in the process of they want to cancel Title 42. What are they going to replace it with? Nobody has a clue. So, you know, they thought they were going to do this for purely political reasons because they promised it during the campaign, you know, we're going to be different than Trump. We're going to be more humanitarian and so on and so on. But the net result is that they've opened the border. And now you have a situation where thousands of people all around the world are showing up in the U.S.-Mexico border saying, I want to ask for asylum. Oh, okay, come right in. Wait your turn. Well, it's an impossible situation. It cannot be managed. And that's what is going through right now. Now, the latest, of course, is that the Supreme Court Chief Justice Roberts extended Title 42. And I believe that, as I heard this morning, that the Biden administration would like to extend Title 42 for another 30 days, I guess, while they come up with a plan. The bottom line is that they have no plan. They don't have any idea. And now the criticism of the Biden administration is not coming from Trump or from Republicans. It's coming from the Democrat mayor of New York City, the Democrat mayor of Philadelphia, the Democrat mayor of Chicago, the Democrat mayor of El Paso, Texas. That's where the criticism is coming from because these mayors, now have to deal with the consequences of open borders, having people in the country who cannot work. They're not bad people. I'm not trying to say they're bad people. But most of them, whatever skills they have, they cannot use them in the United States because they cannot work. There's also an economy issue, too, and that is where they're going to work. So that's another problem. So this whole thing has blown up in their faces, and they don't seem to have the courage, if you will, to look in the camera and say, you know what? We blew this thing. We made a mistake. We're going to go back to remain in Mexico, and we're going to put Title 42 back on. That's what they should do. At least that will fix the problem for the time being. But what we have on the border is purely chaotic. Go down to El Paso, Texas, or just watch videos from El Paso, Texas. It's just you cannot manage a border in that fashion. You just can't. And the media is finally starting to cover it because they have no choice. They have to cover it. But all I can tell you is that it's going to be a totally chaotic situation here because they had the ability they had the ability to control this thing. You're never going to do away with it, but they had the ability to control it. And they lost control of it. And that's what I think happened. They just totally, completely lost control of the situation. So all I can tell you is it's going to get crazy. Well, the January 6th committee, as you probably know, terminated its existence, not its existence, but at least it put out a report. And I think they're recommending to the Department of Justice that they go after President Trump with some criminal charges. What's interesting to me is that the Senate Democrats, there's an interesting article today that came out in a magazine called The Hill. Now, I don't know if that's a print magazine or just a website. I think it's a website called The Hill. It may have been a print magazine at one point, but it's read a great deal. It's read in the Washington, D.C. area and certainly in the Congress. And they have an article today saying that a lot of Senate Democrats want to slow down all of this prosecution against President Trump. And it's not because they love Trump, but because they think that this kind of thing could backfire on the Democrats politically, but also expose future Democrat presidents to prosecution. And that makes a lot of sense to me. You know, there's a reason in American history why we have not gone back and prosecuted former presidents. We more or less say, okay, you're out, go away, retire, and we're going to leave you alone. But that, of course, changed a little bit with President Trump when his home was raided. Well, not raided, that's probably not the right word, but when the FBI showed up at his home with a warrant, so it was not a raid in that sense, but it was they showed up with a warrant to look at some of his documents. And, you know, that really changed the political equation for the future, because we now have a precedent where, you know, the FBI can do something like this. And a lot of Democrats are worried that this is going to backfire, especially with investigations coming up of President Biden and his son. I mean, a lot of that could get very interesting if all of a sudden something comes up. Also, you got this Facebook and Twitter and all of that, and the FBI. So there are going to be some investigations coming up next year that may turn up some information that it could be embarrassing for the Democrats. So I think what a lot of Democrats are doing is they're saying, hey, you know, let's slow down a little bit, and let's just slow down a little bit on investigating former presidents. It's a fascinating article. It's over at The Hill. And, you know, Chris Murphy, who's a Democrat, I think from Delaware, is the one who's saying, hey, let's slow down a little bit and count to 10 before we start talking about prosecuting former presidents. If you've been following the news out of South America, you know that they've had a change of president in Peru. A president was impeached. A new one came in. And now Peru and Mexico, I have a post about this coming out tomorrow. Peru and Mexico are not happy with each other because Mexico criticized the government of Peru or the Congress of Peru for impeaching the president. And Mexico decided to offer this ex-president asylum. And Peru said, you're not giving him asylum. He's going to stay here. He's going to be in jail. So you have this little rift, if you will, between Peru and Mexico. And they're not going to go to war or anything like that. But it has really split their relationship. And the issue here is whether you like or don't like what happened in Peru. It's an internal matter. You know, the Congress in Peru acted within the Constitution of Peru. And they impeached the president, who was violating certain rules, certain laws in Peru, and they replaced him with the next in line, the vice president. And that is, from a constitutional standpoint, correct. There's nothing illegal about that. And Mexico decided to get involved because the president of Mexico thinks that he's the most important person in the world, and he has to stick his nose in all kinds of crazy business everywhere else in Latin America. So it's not pretty right now between Peru and Mexico. And Peru just told the Mexican ambassador he's got 72 hours to leave the country. And they're not going to shut down the embassy, but I assume that Mexico will do the same thing. So I don't think that these two countries are going to be sending each other Christmas cards this year. I have a feeling that that's not going to happen between these two countries. What's interesting about this is that Mexico has had a history of not involving itself in the affairs of other countries. Mexico has always had that policy. We don't get involved. We don't comment. It's your business, your country. You do whatever you want to do, and you don't get involved in our country. And all of a sudden, Mexico decided to get involved in a Peruvian situation, and they're not happy. They're not happy in Peru whatsoever. And you know what? I don't blame the Peruvians here, because Mexico had no business getting involved in this. You can dislike or like whatever Peru did. You know, that's an honest debate. But Mexico has no business criticizing what they did in Peru. Well, we close with a little note on this day in history. This is a very sad note. On this day in 1988, that makes it 34 years ago, Pan Am 103 was blown up over Scotland. You may remember that story. It was a horrible terrorist attack. It killed about 250 people, including about 54 university students who were flying back to the United States from Syracuse University in New York. They were flying back to the United States after having spent, a year or so in Scotland, and they were flying back. The plane was blown up over Scotland. We eventually, after a long time, determined that Libya was responsible for it, or at least elements in the Libyan government. And eventually these people were arrested. And now I understand we just arrested another one who was involved in this terrorist attack. So a terrible thing 34 years ago, right before Christmas, over Scotland, Pan American 103 blown up over Scotland. Terrible thing. And I remember that quite well because, you know, there was that human element of the 250 people, of course, and those university students who are flying home for Christmas. What a terrible, terrible thing for those families to have to go through. Just a quick reminder, we're going to be recording a podcast, meaning an audio cast, with our friend Frank Burke. We're going to talk about Christmas. That'll be available later today. And that'll be one of our two shows that we're going to do, podcasts that we're going to do about Christmas. The other one's going to be with Leslie Eastman. And we've had Frank before in many of these podcasts, and he usually does a reading or shares with us some thoughts about Christmas. It's always very interesting. So I'm going to recommend that you check out the podcast. That's on the other side of the operation, meaning the audio side of the operation on Blog Talk Radio. Check that out. I think you're going to enjoy our Christmas special with Frank Burke. I hope you're getting ready for Christmas. 4 days and Christmas is here. And here in the area, it's going to be pretty nasty, to say the least. It's going to be very cold here in the North Texas area. It's supposed to drop to 9 degrees over the next 3 or 4 days. So we're not used to that. But you know what? As long as the heater is working, I think we can take the cold weather. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye, everybody. Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Tuesday, December the 20th, and welcome to our commentary. Just a quick heads up. Later today, we'll be recording our weekly podcast with Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We call it the Week in Review, and we'll be looking back at some of the stories from last week and some of the stories in the coming few days. So check that out. It'll be available as a podcast on the Blog Talk Radio side of the operation, but you can hear it probably about 5 o'clock Eastern time. It should be available for download. So we'll be talking to Bill about a lot of stories. Stories that we'll get into today is this whole thing of Title 42, and I've got a few thoughts on that. But before we get into the topics today, let me just remind you that this week we're also going to be doing interviews with Leslie Eastman, Legal Insurrection, and with Frank Burke, who's a great friend of our show. He's a businessman as well as an author up in Wisconsin, and we're going to be doing Christmas shows. That is, you know, we're going to be talking about some of the stories of the day, but also looking at Christmas from the very unique perspective of Leslie, who always has a lot of great things to say, and also Frank Burke, who's been our guest many times in the past. And Frank usually reads something, surprises us with a reading about Christmas. Let me say hello to my good friend. I am. Good afternoon, friend. How you doing? So we'll be doing those shows this week as part of our Christmas programming, the one with Frank. Frank's going to be reading something from Christmas. Check that out. And then Leslie Eastman, always a wonderful guest. Leslie, a commentator, contributor to Legal Insurrection, has always been very involved on issues of the pandemic and stuff like that. Very interesting take on what's happening in the country and around the world. This story, I got to mention this very quickly. I just saw this a few minutes before we began our broadcast. But over in Afghanistan, remember Afghanistan? We pulled out of Afghanistan, I thought, in a very disorganized and chaotic fashion. And as a consequence of our pullout, many people lost their lives or have lost their way of life or their freedoms. Well, we have more proof of that today. The Afghanistan government has now said that women can no longer get a university education. They're basically saying no more. No more university education for women. I guess they're going to go back to the system the way it was before we took them out in 2001, 2002. Look, I understand we cannot fix every problem in the world, and I understand that there are things around the world that we just have to accept no matter how awful they are. But this in Afghanistan did not have to happen. This is the consequence of the very reckless and irresponsible withdrawal that we made last year or August of 2021. We pulled out without checking our, without looking at the consequences on women and not only women, but many little girls who were going to school. And we pulled out the way we did. We simply said, let's get out and the heck with it. Well, this is what happens. We didn't have to get out the way we did. I'm not saying that we should be fighting in Afghanistan forever. That I've never believed that. But the reality is that we had, when we left, when we were in Afghanistan in 2021, before this pullout, we had that country, you know, we could have kept a force there. We could have kept a force and maintained some kind of influence in that country. And we didn't do that. And once the rebels understood that we were going to be pulling out the way we did, well, they just overran the country. And we know the consequences now. So I feel bad. I feel bad for the women of Afghanistan who once again been thrown under the bus by the West. And I'd like to see the feminists around the world really stand up and say something about this. I like to see, you know, many countries, and I'm sure many will, say something about this outrageous decision by the Afghan government saying that women can no longer get a university education. That is just absurd. But that's the way it is in Afghanistan. Let's talk a little bit about Title 42. Title 42, you know, I was doing a little reading on this. Title 42 actually goes back almost 100 years. And it was a part of our health care law that allowed a president to use Title 42 in case of a public health crisis. And President Trump used it when he basically closed the border because of the pandemic and used Title 42 to control the flow of people coming to the United States. And it's, I suppose, been working better than nothing. Well, Title 42 is going to be expiring on the 21st, but Justice Roberts has kept it in place for a little bit. I don't know how much longer, by the way, Justice Roberts can keep this on the books, because it is, at the end of the day, a presidential decision. And perhaps even a congressional decision, I'm not sure, but it was President Trump who used Title 42, so I'm assuming that President Biden can undo it just because it's an executive type action. But Title 42 has been responsible to some degree for, you know, putting down the number of people crossing over. So if you remove it, you're just going to have that many more people coming over. I don't know where the Biden administration is on this. I have no idea if they are going to act in any responsible way, but they're getting a lot of heat from a lot of different places, not just Republicans, about this border crisis. But the Biden administration just doesn't seem to care. I mean, their whole attitude is so lackadaisical about the border crisis, and they ought to go down to El Paso and check out what's happening in El Paso, where a city has basically declared an emergency because they simply cannot handle the numbers of people coming over, and they fear that the numbers are going to increase dramatically if Title 42 is removed. So again, I don't know how much longer you can keep Title 42 on the books by having a judge like Justice Roberts keep it in the books. I think at some point this has to go back to the president, and he's going to have to make a call. And so far, he doesn't seem interested in making any calls. I mean, he just seems to be completely disengaged from this issue on the border. But it has to be addressed. The situation on the border has to be addressed. You can no longer put this off. This administration, as I say, has been recklessly irresponsible in dealing with the border. Well, speaking of the border, south of the border, that is, very interesting story. I have a post about this over at the American Thinker on Tuesday morning. You can check it out over at the American Thinker. In Mexico, they've had a lot of violence, as all of you know who follow me or who follow the news coming out of Mexico. They've had a lot of violence and specifically a lot of attacks on journalists. In fact, just in 2022 alone, 12 members of the press have been killed by, you know, different people. No one really knows for sure who does it, but they're usually, the way they kill these journalists, you kind of get the impression that these are professional assassins. You know, this is not just some frustrated reader of the newspaper who goes out and kills a newspaper man. No, it's a little bit more organized than that. Many people suspect that the killers are members of the cartels and they're killing journalists to intimidate them so that they don't report on the violence and what's happening with the cartels in the country. Well, the other night, one of the major news anchors of Mexico City Television, one of the top two or three members of the local TV media in Mexico City, was going home. And when he was on his way home, he was attacked by a couple of guys in a motorcycle. They shot at him. Thankfully, they didn't kill him because he had an armored automobile. And that protected him. Without that protection, I'm sure he would have been killed like some of the others. So the gentleman survived, and the police got involved. They have not arrested anybody yet, but it's just the latest incident. Now, what makes this particular case so interesting, and I write about this over at the American Thinker, is that a couple of days before, the president of Mexico had publicly criticized this journalist, basically saying that this guy was dishonest, and he was just reporting a lot of things that were untrue. And he came down very hard on this man. And of course, many people in Mexico are wondering if there's a connection between the assassination attempt and the words of the president. I mean, nobody has any evidence that there is a connection, but people in Mexico suspect, you know, they keep attacking members of the press. And here's the president of the of Mexico attacking a prominent member of the media. So I don't know where this is going to go, but it's just more unhappiness, more and more unhappiness coming out of Mexico. And in this particular case, a lot of people wondering how much longer can this go on? I mean, how much longer can Mexico be a country under some kind of control when you have this kind of violence? I don't know, but it's a very scary situation. If you're a member of the media in Mexico and you have reported anything negative about the cartels or against public people, you're scared. You're scared. And you've seen some of your colleagues get killed 12 times this year alone. So we're glad that this particular news anchor is okay. I'm glad that he's okay. But I have to tell you, it must have been a scary moment when he was when they tried to assassinate him right in his car on his way home. Well, on this day in history, let's close with this little note. From on this day in history, 1957, go back 1957, on this day in history, Elvis Presley got his draft notice. He was sent a little telegram like people used to back then, a little telegram saying, Elvis, you've been drafted, show up at the Army station, whenever it was. And that's what happened. Elvis actually went in the Army. He served a couple of years, spent a couple of years in Germany. And what's interesting is during that time that he was in the military, that the RCA records had new songs every two or three months. And that's because before he left, they made sure that there were lots and lots of songs in the inventory so that they could keep him going while he was away in the Army. And when he came back, it's like he'd never been gone really from the radio because of the number of hits that he was able to enjoy while he was in the military. As everybody knows, just a little detail, when he was in the Army, when he was in Germany, that's when he met his future wife, Priscilla, who was the daughter of an officer or something at the Army. They met and they were married, of course, later in the 1960s. So Elvis got drafted on this day in 1957. That must have been quite a shock. You're Elvis Presley and you get a telegram saying you've been drafted. Must have been pretty interesting, but to his credit, to Elvis' credit, he went to the Army, served his time, didn't complain, came back more popular than ever. So I guess there is maybe a story there, a moral there in that particular story. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. Enjoy your day. And if you're in North Texas, you know what that means. You better wear a coat because it's going to get pretty nasty here in the next couple of days. Bye-bye, everybody. This is Silvio Canto, and we'll talk to you later.